I called my mother yesterday, as I do almost every day, returning her phone call, several phone calls, and she was upset with me. She said, I opened the Google, and there I was. I said, what do you mean? She's like, it was right on the AOL. A story about me, the two of us together, about me and my cancer. What is going on? And I had forgotten to tell her that I did an interview a couple weeks ago for this cancer charity. It's a support group called SurvivorNet. And this sounds like humble bragging.
Oh, you are such a wonderful person.
I know, but I'm telling you how it happened. And I did this thing for Kappa Chi Zoo, shout out. It was a camp for kids that burned down in the fires in California. Somebody reached out about this interview, and I did it to help, you know, bring more awareness to the charity, whatever. I forgot to tell my mother that. It was all about, the interview was about how mom had cancer, which she did 15 years ago, and what it was like for us, you know.
And you described her as having a really good attitude during that process and being perky. And I saw her yesterday, too, and she was like, she told me the whole story, too. She's like, I realized that he was talking about me, and he described me as perky. I said, well, you weren't perky, but it's still nice that he mentioned you, and he did this nice thing for charity. She was like, I know it is. But I wasn't perky.
I don't know why she was so hung up on that. She was perky. I don't remember her being really, anyway.
Speaking of perky.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's perk up the show.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your often perky host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
With me, as always, is my maybe less perky.
You're definitely not, less perky. Yeah. I think you might
have you ever been described as perky?
No. I think you might. I sound like Eeyore. No.
No, I guess not.
I think you might be offended. Just play devil's advocate. You might be offended to be called perky if you were going through chemo and you were going through a really hard time and someone from the outside said, oh, you seem perky.
Yes, but
you might be like, come on.
I know, but in the context, I would weigh it in the context, which was, I'm going through this really difficult thing, these procedures that, you know, she was bald. I mean, I remember that being really hard for her.
I like will say she handled it very well.
Exactly. That's the context
but
in which
perky,
I said it.
But the word perky,
maybe that's a little condescending.
It's a little
cutesy.
And also, for the record, you weren't there.
I know.
And not because you're a bad son, but because you were working. I was there because I'm a good son.
and wasn't working.
And she was definitely less perky than her normal self.
She was.
Normally, she's a very perky person.
Well, you know what? I also, as discussed, it's also one of those stories where those interviews where if you choose the wrong word, it's forever there. It's like you're talking to somebody on the phone. This is just to defend myself. As we just learned, I have a terrible memory, as you're constantly reminding me of. What was the thing? I didn't remember. Oh, we were talking about how we had a radio show when we were kids, and I didn't remember the name of it. I have a terrible memory, and so my memory is often, it's a little bit, it's malleable. More so than other people's memories. And
it's a really flattering way to describe your bad memory.
And I have, I think it was really influenced by this video that I recently saw of her going during that time in this hotel room. They put me up at this, you know, that hotel. And she was so excited. She was like on cloud nine to be in this fancy hotel room. And so maybe that's what I'm remembering.
Definitely. And also, again, you weren't there, you weren't present for
I'm not
the lion's share of this experience. So the lion's share. So so I think you just got snippets.
I mean,
you got phone calls and
yeah, you
know, whatever. Anyway, yeah. Speaking of
that was hard.
Speaking of cancer and speaking of perky.
But also like, wait, sorry to interrupt. I also hate that I sounded like I was the victim. Like this was difficult for us. It was her that was going through it. But that's what SurvivorNet does. I think SurvivorNet is about, it's a support system for everybody who is dealing with cancer, not just the patients, but the families of the patients. Anyway, it's a really good thing if you want to check out SurvivorNet.com. And sorry, mother, for not telling you that you were in People magazine yesterday.
And sorry for continuing to publicly shame you.
Yeah, it must have been weird to open, because I also said to her, I'm sure her algorithm, the Google algorithm goes right. I don't think it was like headline news. So it wouldn't have come up for everybody.
Or she Googles herself every day.
Yeah, maybe. I just think she Googles me enough that, you know, because she was also like, and right next to that was a story about Drew, you know, and so I think she's always looking for stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's a terrible impression.
Yeah, I know. That doesn't sound
You make her like sound like a batty old lady.
It sounded more like Drew, actually.
That's true.
Yeah. That's true. Sorry, you were about to introduce the guest.
Yeah, because it's a show yes. where we have a really impressive guest. But if you want to talk more, that's fine too.
I know. We can cut that out.
No. This is good stuff.
Shut up. Okay.
So speaking of perky.
Oh, that's right. Katie's going to be... she's going to be...
She's not going to listen.
I bet she will.
Oh, really?
She's very supportive.
Well, now I'm nervous.
You should be. She's one of our most impressive, if not our most impressive.
Easy.
Yeah. We don't get a lot of... No offense to our other Life is Short guests that we've had, but we don't get a lot of guests like this. She is she's special, and she's one of the most impressive figures, public figures. And we have her on the show. Why am I still talking?
Her name is Katie Couric.
Yes, you all know her. She doesn't really need an introduction.
Well, she got a really long, rambly one.
Well, that's not – technically, that's not an introduction of her. That's just
– It's supposed rambling. To be.
I know. Okay. So, but people know her primarily from – America, just being in a distinguished in America.
If you're living in this country or abroad, really.
Oh yeah, everyone.
You know Katie Couric. She's one of our foremost news people, journalists.
Mm-hmm.
She was the host, among other things she's done. She was the host of the CBS Evening News, the first woman to host the nightly news, shattering that ceiling.
That's right. And I remember at one point in my life, she was. Didn't she also do the morning show? Today Show. Or Good Morning America.
Today Show. She's really done it all.
She's done it all. So then she had like a daytime show. At any time of the day, you could see Katie Couric and you could, and she was always so poised and present and obviously very bright. I guess that all goes without saying. Maybe that's actually condescending to say.
Well, speaking of condescending, I think when she was younger in her career, earlier in her career, she had this label put on her. Of America's sweetheart, and speaking of perky, people describe her as perky and cute, which obviously in retrospect is quite sexist.
It is.
That she was this incredibly impressive journalist who was being reduced to cute and perky and America's sweetheart. And she was like, she turned out to be like our Walter Cronkite.
Yeah.
Our Peter Jennings, Dan Rather. I mean, she's right up there.
Yeah, she is a true authority figure when it comes to objective news delivery. I mean, when it comes to journalism, you're right. She is in those hallowed halls of the greats.
The upper echelon.
But people with gravitas and authority.
Yes.
And it just so happened to be in this cute package. Can I not even say that?
I don't know.
She's attractive, okay? I mean, physically.
So is Dan Rather.
So is Dan Rather.
And no one talked about his face.
You're right.
It's not fair.
You're right. Peter Jennings was too, by the way.
Yeah, very handsome.
Really handsome.
We can say that.
We do talk about how handsome he was.
So can we hear from her? Can I hear from her?
I would love you to. I would like to, too, again. Because that's how...
I mean, I like listening to you talk, too.
Okay, here we go. And everyone you're about to listen to, I'll say it, our most impressive guest. And one of the most impressive public figures of the last quarter century, the intimidable. Intimidable?
Imitable? Imitable?
Uh-oh. Indomitable?
Indubitable?
She has an indomitable spirit. Well, the opposite of me, Katie Couric.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboo.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, This ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up we'll meet again.
Is this kind of like a break for you to do these? Not that I'm saying I'm so grateful that you're taking the time, but as such an accomplished interviewer, is it kind of nice to be on the other side of it and let other people struggle with questions?
It depends. It depends on who's asking the questions and
I guess so, yeah.
You know, the chemistry I have with them and sort of what they're interested in talking about. But, you know, I think there's so much content out there, Justin, now that you know, and I'm sort of not in the white hot spotlight like I used to be. So I can get away with saying a lot more than I used to when I was like anchoring the CBS Evening News or even doing the Today Show.
Is that a relief for you? Is that a nice
position
to be in?
I think it's liberating, honestly. I mean, I think I'm definitely more vocal than I would be if I were in mainstream media right now. And I still try to not be hyper partisan, but I am able to speak my mind and not have all these PR people around me.
I've noticed that. I've noticed that as a follower, as an avid follower of your Instagram account, you continue to report objectively, but it's hard to mistake a slight bias in terms of a political
leaning. Well, I think, you know, honestly, I think it's hard not to be biased today. I think if you're honest with yourself, if you're honest with the kind of things that have been going on, the kinds of antics that have been, I think, routinely performed by the Trump administration and the undermining of our democratic institutions, whether it's the press, whether it's the law, whether it's the electoral process. And I think it's really hard to sit back and be that kind of on one hand, on the other hand, or, this, and then, you know, giving a different perspective when someone is behaving in a way that's so unconscionable. I'm wrapping up my memoirs, and I interviewed David Duke many years ago, who is, you know, a white supremacist, a really disgusting guy. And I remember I had just started on the Today Show and I gave him holy hell. I quoted back at him in a very Tim Russert-esque way. And for your listeners, Tim Russert was the esteemed host or, you know, moderator of Meet the Press for many years. And I think he's honestly never been replaced on any Sunday public affairs show. But I just gave it to David Duke and my dad called me and said, bravo. My dad was a print journalist. And he said, you know, that was Edward R. Murrow worthy. And sometimes I think, you know, while journalists are supposed to be objective, and I do think they've crossed the line and become almost too outwardly opinionated, rolling their eyes or laughing or shaking their heads incessantly, I do think that various things that the Trump administration and the president himself have done over the last 4 years, you know, they need to be called out, and they're completely unacceptable. So, you know,
but
yeah.
in order to, as your dad said, give it to David Duke and go after somebody like that, don't you need to coax them in? Don't you need to make them somehow comfortable enough to almost trap them into saying certain things?
I think it depends. I think every interview, honestly, is different, and you take a different tact with everybody you're talking to. I think in his case, he was running for president, or maybe he was running for Senate in Louisiana.
Well, did he win a congressional seat?
I have to look it up.
I don't know.
I think he might have been a congressman for a short period of time. You know, this is the wonders of Google.
Yeah,
and
great.
I'm going to look that up. Oh shit, I would, but my iPad just ran out of juice.
So now your Google algorithm is going to get confused. They're going to wonder if you're looking them up because you're a fan, or
hopefully not.
No, I'll look them up.
Yeah, see if he was a member of Congress. He might have been a one-term congressman, but I don't remember. I know he ran for a bunch of different things and had a short-lived run for the presidency.
But how do you go into that interview and remain at least outwardly as objective as possible? Is there a performance element that comes into play?
For that interview, I actually just quoted some of his heinous comments back to him, like Jews belong in the dustbin of society or something, and some very racist anti-Asian remark. I think he said, we know by our cars, we know by your rice or something. And I said, doesn't that sound dangerously like no ticky, no laundry? And you know, I think I was just very well prepared. And, you know, I think that his record of saying really inappropriate, obnoxious, and racist, anti-Semitic things was so clear that I didn't have to trip him into anything. I just used his words to kind of ask him about his position. You know, with Sarah Palin, it was different because, as Madeleine Albright told me at the time, she was a blank slate and nobody really knew her views of the world or how she would govern or her political philosophy.
Right.
And they had never heard her really articulate it except for at the Republican National Convention. So I didn't trap her, but what I did give her room and airtime to kind of to elaborate on her policy positions. And, you know, I think what America discovered, and I painfully observed, is she just couldn't do it. You know, she wasn't ready for prime time. And plus, she had that added handicap of having this very strange cadence and way of talking.
Yes.
Very Marge Gunderson, you know, in Fargo.
There was something kind of condescending about her tone and her delivery.
I remember when you did the double interview with McCain and Palin, that to me was almost more impressive because you were navigating both of them in such a deft way. And he was kind of trying to support her and explain what she was going for. I think she had said something about Assad. Were we to attack Syria, we would want, you know, we would let them know or something like that. And McCain,
she said something dumb on, you know, she was in a rope line and I can't remember, but it was kind of contrary to U.S. policy. And
yes,
it was just kind of a blunder. And, you know, I chalked that up to the fact that she was just painfully inexperienced on a national stage.
But it was remarkable that she wasn't able to, and I find this often with politicians, with many people, that they can't admit that they made a mistake. It's very difficult to, even now, Republican, Democrat, it seems very difficult for a politician to, and when they do, on the rare occasion they do, I find it so admirable. I'm tr- I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but McCain and Palin were both accusing that blunder. They were both accusing gotcha politics of being responsible for that blunder.
Right.
You know, it's gotcha politics. How do you, and you were so good at, you were so measured and you wouldn't let up on them. How do you ride that line between potentially angering somebody and staying on course with a line of questioning like that? Specifically in that case, how do you hang in there?
I think, you know, a lot of it is tone. I think you try to be persistent and, you know, I think it takes actually a fair amount of emotional intelligence and ability to read the room to figure out how far you can push without it actually just seeming rude. So it's always that kind of balance, you know, and also I always have this kind of slight smile on my face in a pleasant way, so that I think that I never came across as an attack dog. In fact, sometimes I got in the habit of smiling too much when I was doing a serious thing, and instead of being sort of totally without an expression, because I think I used to smile to kind of encourage people, you know, that I was hearing them, I was engaged, I was listening, I was, you know, wanted them to continue. So I don't know. I think it's just, you just have to kind of feel it out. But
Katie, was that deliberate, or was that just how you were socially? Is that just, did that just come naturally to something like that?
I don't know. I remember early on, you know, I used to nod. And I learned very early on from someone, you know, you cannot nod. And it's funny because once in a while I see people on television or online nodding.
Oh, I do it all the time.
It is not cool. I mean, you can do it with some people, but when you're doing it with a politician or somebody in a position of authority, it gives viewers the impression that you agree with them. So
oh,
you can't be like,
so
you cannot nod.
Oh, interesting. Because early on, I found myself listening back to some of these interviews. I realized I had some really obnoxious habits, and one of them was constantly affirming what the person was saying.
Like saying,
I'm still doing it.
I think in podcasting, actually, I think that's surprisingly encouraged. You know, I don't know if you listen to Michael Barbaro on The Daily, but he goes,
Okay.
Yeah, and I think there's something for the listener that reminds people, especially if it's a long, complicated answer, that kind of reminds people that there's somebody on the other side of the microphone. So I don't think it's necessarily really a bad thing, especially in this medium. What have you learned about interviewing? Do you feel like you've gotten better?
I hope. People listening might think otherwise, but yeah, you know, I think I've gotten more patient. Talking to somebody like you is a little different because this is what you do. You're one of the best at doing this. So it's kind of like, it's a bit like playing, you know, like playing one-on-one with Michael Jordan or something. I'm far more intimidated, I think, than I normally would be. I'm trying to play it very cool.
First of all, I don't know. I hope you're not intimidated, because, you know, I've been doing this a long time. And if I weren't good at it, there'd be something really wrong with me, because, I mean, the 10,000 hours of experience that Malcolm Gladwell talks about, I think I've had probably 100,000 hours or more. So I should be pretty good at it. But, you know, I think it's just really being interested in people and listening. And I think doing your homework's important, because I think, you know, I remember feeling so insulted at times during my career when I was doing something. Maybe I was in an event, I was doing something. It was so clear that the person, you know, had no idea and hadn't given it a moment's thought. And
it's so disrespectful.
Well, I mean, it was more that they just asked really dumb questions.
And it becomes like a waste of time.
Yeah, it was sort of insulting, honestly, you know?
What was something that you learned early on that maybe you came to realize was getting in the way of the interview being as good as it could be, something that you had to kind of adjust in your behavior.
Well, on live television, you know, it's really hard. I mean, even with a podcast, you know, if you really screw it up, you can edit it out.
Right.
Or you can.
Oh, so far,
you know,
all
say,
of this being is out.
But, you know, on live television, that kind of raises the stakes so much. And
I can't imagine.
It took me a long time to feel comfortable on live television, because everything you do, everything you say, every facial expression you give is kind of under a microscope. And I think I had to get comfortable enough to, you know, not rely on a list of questions and to really listen, to know the subject matter well enough that I could able to translate it to the general public, but not so well that I was talking at a certain level that nobody could understand. Right. That it wasn't too granular in the weeds. But I think I learned early on how critically important it is to, well, there are a few things. Make the person comfortable, unless, you know, it's someone who's, you know, I didn't want to make David Duke comfortable. If you're holding someone's feet to the fire, but there are certain situations where someone is bearing his or her soul and you want them to feel heard and cared for and in a way protected if under certain circumstances. As I said, every situation's different. But then I think you just really want to be a great listener. And I think you want to listen so well and know the subject matter so well, or know kind of what you're trying to solicit from that person, that you can throw away your notes and pick up on a point and then say, well, what do you mean by that? Or, well, that's so interesting. In fact, I was going to ask you that later, but let's talk about it now. You know, that kind of thing.
You're able to be more present.
And more spontaneous.
Yeah. Huh. So in the case of, not to labor the Sarah Palin interview, but just as a touchstone, something like that was the, do you go in with an agenda? Do you go in, or in that case, was it, I just want her to expand on some of the little limited things she's already said and some of her
positions. I didn't go in with an agenda per se, but my goal was to really, I mean, in some ways hold her feet to the fire, in some ways make sure that she understood public policy, that you know, if you'll remember, John McCain at the time was going to be the oldest president. He had had melanoma 4 times. She would be, as we know, a heartbeat away from the presidency. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, that she knew what she was talking about. And she had performed she was sort of skimming the trees with Charlie Gibson when he did an interview with her. And so we just made it broad. And as Madeleine Albright said, she's a blank slate. Let her talk. So that's one thing that I really learned during the Sarah Palin interview. And I think I knew it before, but I think with interviewing, sometimes you want to fill up the silence or the empty spaces.
Yes.
Because especially on live television, where seconds seems like an eternity.
Sure.
This was tape, but even so, I didn't rescue her. You know, I didn't come in. I just listened.
What publications do you read? You don't fill them. You don't offer any. See, that's what I would have done. I would have said, you know, for example, like such and such. I would have given her options.
Yeah.
But there was
and
something.
And that was just a very, very kind of. I like just offhand. Pulled that question out of my ass. That was just to kind of get B-roll and us walking and talking.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
but
I noticed
when there
that.
Were and other it, questions, yeah.
It almost looked like, Katie, correct me if I'm wrong, that you, did she have a handler off camera that was like, let's move on from that? I got the sense that there were people around her who were like, they recognized that she was drowning a bit. Are there people like that who were publicists and stuff trying to get you off
topic? I think at the time, you know, to get a walking and talking shot, there wasn't anyone within her line of vision because you know, you have to kind of clear the area. It's more when you're sitting there that you have somebody who may, you know, say, wait a second, okay, time's up. I have that with Gal Gadot, who I really liked. And I was talking to her about being in the Israeli army, which is so interesting. And
so interesting.
You know, and I always want to give actors, you know, an opportunity to show that they're smart, you know?
Yes.
And well, you know, and, or, you know, to talk about
well-rounded
it, if they want to talk about it. Yeah. And her publicist was like, just really, really on me to wrap it up. And,
oh,
and,
wow.
You know, and I don't know whether, you know, maybe it was a good cop, bad cop thing, but I really like Gal Gadot and I was really interested. Just fascinating background. And,
yeah.
You know, but who knows? They might
say, well,
her publicist
is Palestinian.
Who knows?
Yeah.
What?
I think her pub. No, I'm kidding. I was going to say her publicist.
I was like, what? Do-do-do-do-do, shaboom.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled babbel.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
When you were a kid, Katie, do you remember your earliest, do you remember falling in love with journalism? Do you remember having a moment where you thought, that's what I want to do? Did you have that moment in childhood?
I mean, I always liked to write. You know, I remember I had a poem in my first grade, my elementary school, like journal, and it was, snow is fun. Yes, you are right. It gives you quite an appetite. But the problem was I had plagiarized it from my book by P.D. Eastman called Snow. And it was one of those things. I was six. I didn't quite probably understand what plagiarism was.
Yeah.
And I had just like written it and then it got published. I remember feeling,
oh my God.
At a young age, completely mortified and guilt-ridden and just embarrassed. And
Were you discovered? Did P.D. Eastman?
I don't know. P.D. Eastman did not call Jamestown Elementary and complain, and it wasn't an expose in the Washington Post or anything. But I just remember kind of thinking, oh, wait, that really wasn't my poem. I don't remember even talking to my mom and dad about it, but I think it's because I was six and it was like not a big deal. But
oh, I'm sorry.
I think about feeling so ashamed that
yes.
I did that.
Yes.
So ashamed. And
oh, God,
needless
yeah.
to say, I never plagiarized again. So maybe that was a good lesson early on to not take credit for someone else's work. But I just loved words. I loved language. My dad was a print journalist for the Atlanta Constitution and United Press. My father was just this incredible Renaissance man. Sounds a little like your dad, Justin. My dad was, you know, loved history, could kind of talk fluently about anything. I just worshipped him. And as you know, as I wrote, I have a memoir coming out, and I wrote that I think it was my dad that made me fall in love with words. And he used to ask us to come to the dinner table with a new vocabulary word. Oh, I remember coming with like incongruity was one of my words. I've always been sort of creative, and I just fostered that. My mom was quite creative. My mom was very clever and a really good artist, and you know, in a different era, I think she would have been a working woman. She did layout for Coronet, which I think was a branch or a precursor to Esquire in Chicago. And she was a cartographer for Rand McNally. And
wow.
But then when she got married, you know, she stopped working because, you know, I mean, I'm sort of a generation ahead of you, but most parents of people my age, most mothers, didn't work.
They were housewives. Did you have a lot of maps around the house? A lot of framed maps?
No. But my mom painted, and I have a couple of her paintings. And
oh, wow.
They were just, you know, I've been going through a lot of letters. I'm a pack rat, and I've been going through things for my book to find photographs and all that for the insert. And I'm just amazed. I mean, it made me sort of sad because people just don't write letters anymore.
I know.
And I have my mom, and to a lesser extent, my dad, but my mom wrote me so many letters when I was in college. And I saw this other letter that right before I came to you, where my sister Emily wrote to me. She was 10 years older. She died of pancreatic cancer when she was 54, but she must have been at Smith College. That's where both my sisters went to school. Yeah. And she said, "I can't believe it. You're 9 years old." And it was just, it's such a treasure, obviously, because I lost my sister. But just to have that physical thing in an envelope, to see her handwriting, and to see my mom's kind of cool block print, because she was kind of, you know, kind of graphically inclined. So even the way she wrote her letters and in her letters,
it was a part of her.
You know, the letter writing is such a lost art, and there's something for me that is just so unbelievably precious to have these things in a box. And when my husband Jay died, you know, I asked at his funeral, my sister Emily read the eulogy I'd written, because it was just too hard for me to do that. But I asked everyone there if they could to write a letter to my daughters about their father. And so Ellie was only six when Jay died, and Carrie had just turned two. And so I have these letters from boyhood friends of Jay's, from friends of his in high school at W&L, where he played lacrosse. I have letters from, in the Navy, from people. I have a letter from a woman who's now the mayor of Seattle, Jenny Durkin, who worked with my husband at Williams and Connolly, a law firm in Washington, who wrote to the girls that after our first date, that Jay walked into her office at the firm and said, I just met the girl I'm going to marry.
Oh,
and it was so cute.
Oh,
and all these letters are just so moving. And, you know, I've often said to people, if you lose someone you love, and in fact, I have a friend who just lost her husband, she has a 5-year-old son, that those are, you know, I think it makes them sad to read them, but someday they're going to be so grateful that they these.
Like your daughters, I mean, how often do they read those? Do they ever take those out?
I pull them out a few times. I think Carrie does, and Carrie's very interested in sort of our family history. And on my dad's side, we have a lot of, you know, Southerners and people who were in the Confederacy. And Carrie is very, very into history and is appalled by our Civil War provenance. And
why?
Well, because Jay, my husband, and their dad back in the 90s used to be a Civil War reenactor for the Confederacy. Wow. He was obsessed, I would say, somewhat with the Civil War, but also he was kind of obsessed with militaria, and his dad fought in World War II. And so I think it's been very confounding for Carrie, especially, who's extremely woke. And I say that in a good way.
Yes,
and,
yes. Good woke.
And yes. And but it's been hard for her to square Jay's passion for the Civil War with the kind of reckoning that we've seen in recent years about Confederate iconography and kind of how the Civil War heretofore has been presented to us. So it's been really interesting.
I bet. And was Jay, so Jay, he would dress up and he would. Wow. Did you ever go along with him to any of those reenactments?
I know that we walked around one that he wasn't participating in, but I used to tease him and say, if you think I'm going to, you know, walk around in a hoop skirt and a snood, I just like to say snood.
Snood's a great
word.
Those are
those netty things that hold your bun or your ponytail or whatever. I said, you know, you've got another thing coming. And he'd always say, hey, it's much better than drinking, gambling, and chasing women.
That is true.
I'd say, yeah, you're right. And, you know, he loved horses. He was quite a talented equestrian. And I think he was also a really, he was such a reverse snob that I think he liked the cross-section of people who were drawn to this kind of activity. You know, so he would have dentists and lawyers and plumbers and all kinds of different people that I think also with two girls and a pretty strong, you know, strong-willed wife, I think he loved the male bonding. And they'd sleep in tents and, you know, they'd eat out of these adjacent tin plates. And it's so crazy.
It is funny that you would be with somebody like that and obviously be so, because you don't, but it's also nice that you... It's funny. I was going to ask you, because you seem like you have such a great relationship now with your husband. I was going to ask, are there things that you just don't get that he's into? That you're
golf.
Just so golf. Okay. Funny.
John. Yeah.
John.
Oh my God. He is right now. He's pig and shit. He is in Augusta playing at
the
Augusta.
Masters?
That's where they play the Masters, but the Masters course. And oh my God. He was like a kid on Christmas morning. Last night. I talked to him and he was like, I'm leaving it. I got to get up at 5:30. I'm so excited. I got my COVID test. I'm negative and I'm real. And it's just so, and you know, after a while, and you know, I think you should support someone's passion, even if you don't share it. Right.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
if something gives, I was supportive of Jay. I mean, I used to roll my eyes and be like, you're insane. And what are you doing? But, you know, in retrospect, I think what I realized is, you know, isn't it great when somebody gets so much pleasure from something? And then you're like, I am so glad. Plus, I like being independent. I like doing my own thing. And I don't want to be, you know, stuck to my partner 24/7.
Totally.
So I'm all for them. I'm all for people to have different interests and very fully supportive.
And you've got a couple of John free days now. You can do your own thing.
Well, you know, actually I've been out on Long Island.
Yes,
for a lot of the pandemic. He's been in the city and we kind of go back and forth, but writing my book was a very intense exercise and I was you know, really kind of had to have my nose to the grindstone. So he runs our company and we work together, which has also been a really
interesting
experience.
Well, you did the cooking show.
He's the CEO of we have 25 employees now. And
we're
creating all kinds of different content and a newsletter and a podcast and digital shorts.
Wow.
I'm developing some scripted things and documentaries. So we're like a full-fledged media company.
You're an enterprise. Well, I know John's also friends with Michael J. Fox, and I just finished Michael's book, which I loved. God, it's great.
I have to read it. I haven't read it yet, but everyone loves it. John, John just loves Mike, as they call him.
I saw their interview. They seem like they really got along.
And I mean, I have always been such an incredible admirer of Michael J. Fox. I mean, from a long time ago. I mean, he's been dealing with Parkinson's for decades now, and
something that was close to you. Yes, yeah, no, I know your dad.
Yeah, my dad had Parkinson's, but you know, my dad got Parkinson's when he was about in his early 80s and lived to be 90, and we were so lucky. But for someone like Michael J. Fox to get it at such an early age, and he's just been, I mean, he is heroic. What was it about the book that really resonated with you? I'm just curious.
Well, you know, it was the ability that this human being has to overcome trials that I think would fail any normal person. The resolve that he has, the ability to find gratitude and maintain a sense of optimism in the face of this extraordinarily debilitating thing that I, especially somebody who was so active, you know, who was so, the way he moved. I mean, people don't always think about Michael J. Fox as like a great physical comedian, but he really was. I mean, his, some of the things he does, there's a shot in The Secret of My Success where he's, and he talks about it in the book, where it's this tracking shot where he's like a dancer. I mean, he moved beautifully. And to lose that ability and the things that we just take for granted, and his sense of continued sense of optimism is really incredible. It's inspiring.
I mean, and I really admire, you know, he had that terrible year in 2018.
What it's about.
The book is about, and where he had some unrelated issues. I don't want to, from the Parkinson's, but you know, I see him and Tracy, who's a doll socially. And, you know, I think the fact that he's so comfortable, and Tracy too, you know, there's something that, you know, your heart stops a little bit when you see Mike and he's walking and you feel like he's struggling, and you know, it's that impulse, like you're worried, and he does not want help. You know, he does not want help, but the fact that he is, he's gotten to the point, and I think it's because he's lived with this for so long, that he can go out in public, and clearly he's aware that he's struggling, but there's something about his, I'm trying to think, he just has this presence and this self-awareness that he just kind of forges ahead, and you don't get the sense that he's embarrassed or ashamed or like feeling like this is so awkward. I mean, it's just, he has fully embraced who he is and some of the challenges he faces in a way that makes everyone else relax. I don't think I explained that very well, but
no, that does make sense. And I remember briefly, I got to work with him on the last show he did, which he talks about in the book as being something that I think motivated him to stop acting for a little while. I don't think it was the best experience for me. It was the Michael J. Fox show.
Uh-huh.
Right.
That was after The Good Wife, right?
It was after The Good Wife. Yeah. It was kind of the last. I don't want to speak out of turn, but he talks about this in the book, and it was a starring role, and I think it was too much for him. And I remember thinking, I got the sense that he never showed frustration, but I remember thinking, God, this must be infuriating, because he was such a master of timing. You know, he's such a brilliant comedian and actor, and because of this physical impairment, he just physically wasn't able to deliver, wasn't able to employ the timing that I know that he was capable of. You know, it must be. I remember thinking that's something that would knock me out. I would be down for the count, and I would never be able to express any gratitude. And you know, when you read about his continued gratitude and optimism, and so much of it seems to come from Tracy and his family and the love that he has.
Does he talk honestly about? I mean, because I'm sure he gets very frustrated I mean, this is so funny. We're having this whole conversation for Mike, and he's like, you don't really know me that well, but he's like, does he talk about the moments where he feels so frustrated and, or
he's honest, you know, about all that. Yeah. 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 Totally honest about it. And Katie, I'd actually recommend, cause I listened to the book, I bought the book, but then I ended up listening to most of it on audio, and it's such a great performance too. So you get to, because I miss him as a performer, so you get a little bit of that too, and so moving. Yeah,
I
should. And
I mean, I have it, and it's definitely on my list of books to read. But that's,
you're writing
that's
your own
so
memoir.
Great to hear.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do 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 shaboom.
If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
When your work presentations and docs look good, you look good.
Design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva.
Start with a designer-made template and use it as a springboard for your design.
Add images, graphics, charts, and more from Canva's massive media library.
If you feel like you have a lot of ideas, but it's hard to organize them into a succinct format, I can relate.
Yeah, so when we're putting together a pitch deck for a movie idea that we have that we're currently working on, mm-hmm. We're not going to use an old-fashioned deck. We're going to use Canva, so our deck really pops. It's a complete game changer. So presenting our creative ideas, it's going to be like never before. We're going to wow people with our decks.
Wow any audience and finish your work faster.
Start designing today at canva.com, designed for work.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
You know, part of the reason I've been sort of hesitant to read a lot of books like that is I'm afraid that I'll plagiarize like I did P.D. Eastman, and that somehow it will kind of influence the way I write. No, I'm serious. So I really stayed away. I didn't read Michelle Obama's book yet because I was like, oh, am I going to try to sound just like Michelle Obama? And that's going to be so sad and pathetic. And so now that I'm almost done and I'm just putting the finishing touches on my book, now I feel like I can read other people's memoirs finally.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. And you also, I was going to ask you, because you seem like somebody who was constantly working. That might be, I might be misled about that, but you seem like you are is your work ethic as strong as I think it is?
It's actually too strong. It's like I'm afraid of slowing down, and I mean, I think this is probably fodder for really fine therapists, but I've always been kind of a workaholic. I've always been super productive, and I think it's sort of, you know, a pathetic kind of, I don't know, pathetic effort for relevance and for mattering. And but I also am still really interested and curious about a lot of things. And I feel like, you know, for a certain segment of the population, if I can help increase understanding or expose people to certain ideas, you know, or...
Well, you've been doing that with your Instagram.
I've actually kind of formed, you know, and I really love, I know it sounds so silly, but I feel close to people who follow me. I feel like we've developed this community. I don't know if you feel like that on your Instagram too.
It's funny. I know. I was going to say, I feel like though we've never spoken, I with you, for example, I do feel like I kind of know you a little bit.
Yeah. And but also that. Like you sometimes comment and I'll comment back.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But there's
yeah.
something there's something.
Leslie Jordan, don't you think you know Leslie Jordan?
Oh yeah, he's a doll, isn't he? He's so
oh, God,
funny.
Yes.
Oh, he's I love so Katie. Funny. What does he say? Well,
shit. Yeah. Well, shit. How y'all doing?
He came to see me this summer, and it was so funny. He was really? he was in East Hampton, uh-huh. and I think I must have seen him. That's the funny thing about Instagram, you know?
Yeah.
I might have seen a post, and I was like, oh my God. Leslie Jordan's in East Hampton. Come and have some sweet tea.
Oh, and, my God. I'd be tickled to.
And he came and he sat on my veranda. And we had some sweet tea. And he's just
he's the
most darling. And he just is, you know, isn't it funny that the kind of people who have emerged during this pandemic and what I've been really blown away by in the best way possible is how creative and funny. And, you know, there were all these gatekeepers for so long on the creative community. And when I say the creative community, I mean every community and every person. I don't mean Hollywood, but, you know, and who got to have a shot was dictated by, you know, people who may have a particular point of view or a particular life experience or taste or whatever.
There's something very democratic about this.
Yeah. And it is so awesome to see people like Randy Rainbow out there doing these parodies. And, you know, I just interviewed Robin Shaw, who was this darling comedian, and she's just hilarious. And Jen Garner posted it first. And it was about how her 2020 goals had really just gone to shit. And uh-huh. she was laughing about them because it was like socialize more, make more money, lose weight. And she kept saying like, oh, I've gained 30 pounds, socialize more, you know, stop, you know, don't drink as much. And she
be around more people.
Yeah. And spend more time with my grandmother. And then in a sad, ironic twist, she said, my grandmother died. And she's laughing at the absurdity of all this. And she's so captivating. And
Jen
posted it. Yeah, she's really funny. Jen posted it and it went crazy. And then I posted it did I reach out to her? I think I must have posted it. I didn't want to like be too much of a copycat because you don't want to be like that person. But I ended up doing an Instagram live with her. And now she's going to do some interviews for me
company.
Because honestly, look, nobody's understood this better than Donald J. Trump. But it's all about disintermediation, as they say. Like, you can go directly to consumers. You don't have to beg some executive to give you a shot. You don't have to suck up to them. You don't have to laugh at their dumb jokes. And,
oh, God, you must have done your share of all of that. I can only imagine how much of that.
I don't think I was as good at it as I should have been. And I think probably, you know, in retrospect, not being political, not like playing the game more. I'm just a very direct person. I'm respectful, but I'm just not very good at like, oh, you're so dreamy and smart and that kind of thing. That's just not my jam. So
Katie, was there anyone that surprised you in terms of their personality that you were really thrown by, that maybe, they behaved in a way that was completely counter to what your image of them had been?
Let's get back to that.
I'm panicking a little bit because Jarrett said we have 10 minutes. I'm so sorry.
No, okay. You're fine.
I do want to talk about your cancer charity, Katie, because I know that cancer is a disease. It's affected so many people. You've talked about your sister and your husband. Where can people donate if they're looking to get involved? How might they do that?
Oh, you're so sweet, Justin. That's so nice of you. Well,
no, I think it's, you know, you've done so much work.
I really dealt with the colons initially because Jay died of colon cancer at 42, and you know, it's the number two cancer killer of men and women combined. And Adriana, my iPad's out of juice. Yeah, should we charge it for 5 minutes. Anyway, Adriana is my assistant/daughter.
You didn't tell me you were related. I asked if you were related.
She's not. No, she's not. No, I know. I kind of adopted her. But anyway, whoops. So
I actually learned about it through Chadwick, when you posted about Chadwick Boseman, I didn't know that's how your husband had passed away.
Yeah.
And I know you've been such an instrumental part in terms of getting awareness for colon cancer.
I did a colonoscopy on the Today Show. I got Jimmy Kimmel to do a colonoscopy. Justin, maybe you'll do one with me when you get to be 50 or 45, actually.
Wait.
45.
45, yeah. Really?
Yeah. They lowered the age of a screen colonoscopy. Right. So all your listeners, please, you know, tell people you love who are 45 or over women, too. They need
Jay
to
was
get
only
screened.
42, I know.
He was. And so but they're seeing more and more cases among, younger people. But anyway, so then I realized that we needed to support cancer scientists. All kinds of cancer scientists. So I started Stand Up to Cancer with 8 other crazy women like me because we were frustrated. We wanted to see more collaboration and less competition. And so we've raised, I think, over $600 million to support science. And they work in dream teams where they collaborate. And so they share their research and their tissue samples and their experiences. At first, they were so proprietary, they didn't want to do that. But then I think it was incredibly invigorating to have this kind of teamwork model. Yeah. And so it's been great. People can go to the website, they can make a donation. It's a very much research-based organization because, you know, I feel like, gosh, we can come up with a COVID vaccine and in less than a year, we should be able to come up with better, you know, diagnostic tools and treatment for all kinds of cancer, which, you know, a person dies of cancer every minute in this country.
God in heaven. It'd be great to also divert some of those funds from, you know, cosmetic surgeries and more superficial medical advancements to something, you know, much
more.
Don't
tell the women on Park Avenue that.
No, I won't. They don't listen anyway. Okay, Stand Up to Cancer. These are, Katie, I'm sorry to diminish these other things I wanted to talk about that included, but this is a very short, really quick, like lightning round.
Okay, We can do it. We'll be 5 minutes late for Andrew. He won't care.
Okay, what is your most commonly used emoji, Katie?
The one with the big eyes that, or the eye roll, but the surprise. And I like the little glasses guy too.
Yes, nerdy. I love a good eye roll. If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play?
Baseball.
Baseball. You have a team, the Mets, the Yankees?
I used to like the Washington Senators, but they don't exist anymore.
That's right. The Nationals.
Baltimore Orioles. I guess the Yankees. I'm a New Yorker at this point.
Okay. If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would it be? Your go-to snack food?
Barbecue potato chips.
Delicious. What's your go-to karaoke song?
Crazy by Patsy Cline.
Oh, great song. Okay. Who was your first celebrity crush that you can remember?
My first celebrity crush? Davy Jones of the Monkees.
The Monkees, sure. Adorable. If you had to get a tattoo, what would you get and where on your body?
I would get it on my right above my ass, and it would be. I think it would be because I wouldn't want people to see it. I'm not a tattoo person, but
nor
I would get JPM because my late husband was John Paul Monahan. My current husband is John Paul Molnar, and my dad was John Martin. So I feel like those initials play a really important role in my life.
Oh, great answer! Great. What is your favorite fruit?
My favorite fruit. I'd say cantaloupe in the summer with really good prosciutto.
Oh, wow.
But I love peaches too.
Yeah, a nice ripe Georgia peach. Who would you want to play you in your biopic?
Sally Field, maybe?
Oh, perfect. Yes, my God. Who's your favorite Simpsons character?
I'm going to have to say Marge.
Yeah, okay. Dogs or cats?
I like both. I like both. I can't choose. Yeah.
Beatles or the Stones?
I gotta go with the Beatles.
No, there's no shame in that. I would too. Seinfeld or Friends, if they're both on,
Seinfeld.
What do you watch? Yes.
Seinfeld.
Correct. Ketchup or mustard on a hot dog, anything. Does it depend on what it goes on?
On a hot dog, I'd have to say mustard.
Okay. And the one adjective, finally, the one adjective you'd want people to use to describe you after you've left the earth, what would be your hope?
Not perky.
Not America's sweetheart.
No.
No.
Generous.
Well, I thank you for being generous with your time and with so
much. What a
much
good segue I just gave you, Justin. You're
thank
so
you.
Smooth.
That's what I would say about you. She's very generous with segues.
I mean generosity of spirit and hopefully other ways. But, you know, I think a generous person, I think that means a lot, right? Giving and caring.
I think so. Selfless and, yeah, I can't thank you enough for really – Katie,
well,
I'm a big fan,
and I've been really looking forward to this, Justin. So
likewise.
Hopefully we'll meet again, maybe one day in person. And
I would remember that.
Are you in L.A.?
I'm in Connecticut.
I can't believe you
couldn't tell. I'm in Fairfield.
Oh, you're in Fairfield.
Fairfield.
That was the, got it.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, I got to go because I have to talk to Andrew Ross Sorkin about the economy right now. So I've got to go.
Boring. You don't want to talk about fruit more?
I'll ask him his favorite fruit.
Please do. Katie, thank you. I'm such an admirer of yours. I'm truly grateful that you did this.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Justin. Have a wonderful holiday.
You too.
Big kiss.
Thanks. Big kiss back.
So that happened.
That's my...
That's your Dan Rather?
Yeah. Would you rather Peter Jennings than Dan? Would you Dan Rather Dan?
Peter Jennings was always my favorite growing up.
Mine too. He just... You know why, I think?
You don't both have like Peter Jennings as kids.
You know why, I think? I just realized this.
Canadian?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. You don't both have to think of Canadians are more impressive than Americans in general. Here's why I think... It may be because he looked a lot like Christopher Reeve.
He did.
Yeah, and we, I think so.
Wow, if you had given me 1,000 guesses,
oh, really?
I wouldn't have come up with that.
Oh, didn't he look a lot like Christopher
Reeve?
Yeah,
now that you say it.
Yeah, and we, of course, to us, Christopher Reeve was the ultimate authority.
Yes. Figure.
He was, it didn't get any more. He was Superman.
You know, I just had a theory.
What?
About why.
Oh, share.
Well, because we watched Jeopardy a lot. Growing up, and that was on ABC at 7.
Yep.
And Peter Jennings was on ABC. That came on just before, right? At 6:30.
Yes. Yeah. Pa would always watch.
So maybe we wanted some consistency. We wanted to get that channel on anyway.
Like you're saying, why didn't we watch Ted Koppel or Dan Rather?
Right.
Who was the other one? Ted Koppel was like
Tom Brokaw.
Tom Brokaw.
Tom Brokaw was NBC. Dan Rather was CBS. And
Tom
Brokaw.
I like Tom Brokaw too. Yeah, I like that Tom Brokaw had a slight speech impediment, and he was still one of the most distinguished journalists. Is that good?
It's good, but I don't know.
But Peter Jennings was there was just something.
He was my guy.
But then along comes here we are lauding the men of this. Industry.
It was just a side note. I also really like Katie Couric.
But yeah, Katie Couric comes along and she has the same kind of authority, same gravitas.
I mean, pretty amazing to go from being described as cute and perky in America's Sweetheart to being on the, you know, Mount Rushmore with these distinguished figures. Talk about a trailblazer, you know?
Yeah, and a transformation too, a changing perceptions because, you know, that is a very difficult thing in and of itself to do, to change the way the public thinks. When you are that, when the public has galvanized that strong an opinion of you, and then to have altered it so radically. And God, she's impressive for so many reasons. I mean, what she went through, the trauma, the tragedy that she's
I had forgotten.
Yeah,
I had forgotten about her sister.
I know.
And her first husband, 42.
I know. It was reminded of it when she posted about Chadwick Boseman. And she just seems like she's weathered so many.
She has a real strength.
Times. Yes. That's it.
You might even describe her as badass.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a badass quality. that kind of strength to overcome something like that. I'm glad I haven't had to try that yet. I mean, I can't imagine having to try it, but she did it several times over.
The conversation was, I would say, less of a conversation than a typical episode and more an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in part that's because that's the format she excels at.
I think so. And in her defense, that's how this was all set up. I mean, I think podcasting, because it's relatively new, I think it's best when it's a flowing conversation, when it is just kind of like a back and forth. But I think she comes from, and I'm not saying that this made for a bad podcast. I think I also am so deferential to her that I was happy to let her kind of
You kept trying to pop in at first to make it more conversational, yes. And you're like, and she would, and this is going to sound insulting, but I don't mean it this way. She would kind of plow past you and keep, but in an intelligent way, and finish her train of thought.
Yeah,
but you kept trying to poke in there.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I get picturing you like a little like.
Like a meerkat?
Yeah, or what are those things that pop, moles, or...
meerkats do that. Under
Oh, like whack-a-moles. Yeah, whack-a-moles. I pictured you as a mole, being like, but...
A whack-a-mole, yeah.
And she persisted.
She persisted. Mm. Well done.
Thanks.
Nice. Were you thinking about
no.
that?
No.
Oh, okay. She persisted.
What, you think I'm doing material?
Oh, you're a little fun. That was a little funny. Would I kill you to not be so funny?
Speaking of, you just reminded me, we got to get new chairs.
I know. Oh, you could hear it? So you just heard that.
And I heard that, but you were sitting in my chair.
I know. Wait, move around a little bit.
I don't know. See, I think you must bounce a lot, but you don't normally do it. I think you were
nervous.
Not the most comfortable version of yourself. So you were squeaking like crazy.
I was. Yeah. Maybe I was moving around a lot. See, because when I readjust,
we got to get new chairs. Or oil them or something.
God, you know, it's funny. I remember I posted this thing on Instagram about a cartoon. I remember, I don't know, I was just thinking about being younger last night and drawing a lot when I was a kid. But I remember jumping around so much in my chair in school. I used to fidget so much.
You were fidgety.
Yeah.
You were probably
ADD.
Almost definitely in need of medication as a kid. But I think you were so smart and charming that you were able to get through, you know?
Persisted.
You persisted.
He persisted.
He persisted. Not to say that people who, who need that are not smart, but I think you just like, you kind of just maneuvered your way through the system.
Who was I just talking to? Have you heard me say to talk about ADHD being misdiagnosed? I was just talking to somebody about that. Their
it does
diagnosis.
Sound familiar.
A guest on the show. And I really think, this is my theory, is that because I was just a little old, I just missed the big Adderall boom.
Yeah, by a couple years.
Ritalin, Adderall, all those when they started drugging up kids.
I think my classmates started to get
Yeah, the pharmaceutical
medicated.
Industry somehow wormed their way into our culture.
On a few occasions, she would, she turned the tables and ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
And whatever she did...
I got nervous.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, but you seem to panic a little bit.
Yeah.
And I understand why. I mean, her voice, it's so synonymous with these high-stakes interviews. We've all seen so many of these high-stakes interviews.
I know, with like Bashar al-Assad.
Yeah, so even when she asks you something like, oh, what did you think of the Michael J. Fox book?
Oh.
Just the tone of her voice, it caused a little panic.
It did. And then
you like spewed out all your thoughts as quickly as you could. It was like this verbal diarrhea.
Well, you know,
and she's good at being patient and listening to
the
whole answer and not cutting you off.
I know.
So you just went until you were done.
I like shit it all out. Like this is all, and trying to, because I also want to sound impressive to her, I think. Because I am so respectful of her. You know, I really value her intellect and hurts the speed with which she gets thoughts and the efficiency with which she expresses herself. She's so eloquent. I wanted to be all those things.
I understand.
And I'm not all those things.
Well, you can be if you're relaxed.
Yeah. So you're saying my answer was
it was fine, but I could just hear the panic behind it.
I wonder if people could hear that, because you're right,
and it was like your chair was squeaking away, and
oh God! But it's also a subject that I love talking about usually, and I want. I mean,
you know, well, how do you say it's true? How do you sum that up? What do you think of Michael J. Fox?
Oh, yeah. What do you think of Michael J. Fox? Take me hours to do that,
right?
And certainly, and with the book, I had so many thoughts. I had just listened to that book and I had so many thoughts about it.
But she wasn't asking for a book report. She just said, what did you think of it?
That's what it felt like. I felt, did you hear that? Yeah, it's chairs. Can you oil chairs? You know, we should just get, I like spinny chairs, swivel chairs.
I like the seat of this chair.
Oh, me too. I love it.
I love the cushion.
Yeah. Yeah, but I also like the idea of swivel chairs, but maybe not for this format, because it'll help me maybe stand still, like sit still. Like
that might help you emotionally, too.
Yeah, be more grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, shit. Was it?
I think because I'm, now I'm sensitive to it, because I hear the squeak when we use them, I might be more
I know, but forget the squeak. Now I'm thinking about my own.
Oh, your answer?
Yeah.
No, it was fine. I know you, and I could tell that you were trying to sound impressive, and it was a big question, and you gave a bit of a book report answer instead of, it was really impressive. You know, he's overcome so much, and you said all the things. You just said, like, eight times too much.
Uh-huh. I know exactly what you're talking about. Oh, man, I hope Michael J. Fox wasn't listening to that, because I also want to, God, it was so, that book was so important, I think, for me, and it was so, it had such an impact on me.
I want to read it.
Yeah, it's really beautiful and funny, and not to rehash what I told Katie Couric, but you should definitely read it. I would listen to it, actually, because he also gives a really beautiful performance.
You talk about that.
Oh, I do. Okay.
Yeah. I never realized, she talked about nodding as an interviewer, and I never realized that, it makes perfect sense that this rule exists, but you're not supposed to nod as an interviewer because it indicates that you're agreeing with the person.
Yes, I know.
But I nod, and when I nod, I think like 99% of my nods are, yes, I understand.
I'm absorbing it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And not, I'm agreeing
with you.
Well,
I mean, you also don't talk to like Ayatollah Khomeini.
Not yet.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's different when, like you said, she's in these high stakes conversations.
Right.
Conversations. I mean, that's the thing. She comes from that world where it's like, I'm going to, that's why that Sarah Palin interview is such a good example of, I'm just going to get things out of you. I'm going to extract your belief system from you. And you have to be deft, and you have to be conscientious of things like that. Of being in agree, you know,
of course,
indicating that you agree.
But here's the thing: the opposite of nodding is shaking your head, right? And well, I don't think there's that equivalency, because if I shake my head when someone's talking,
you're right.
And granted, I'm not talking to Ayatollah.
Uh-huh.
I'm shaking my head. That means no, I don't agree with what you're saying. It doesn't normally mean I don't understand you. Whereas when I nod at someone, I think it usually means, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I'm thinking of like, yes, people like a George Plimpton being like, I'm listening.
Exactly.
Yes,
But think about someone going like this to you.
I would do that. Christian's shaking his head. I would do that if, you know, somebody was saying something really awful, or I was incredulous.
You would just shake.
Were saying like, oh, and I saw, you know, I saw
something horrible,
the deer guts all over the road. I'd be like, ugh.
That's true.
No. You know, it'd be like incredulous. Like, I can't believe it.
Like, I don't agree with that.
Yeah. Like, that's no good. I'm not processing that in a good, I'm not positive about with that. That's not exist living positively in me.
But there should be, if nodding is I understand, there should be an opposite I don't understand. And I think.
Well, wouldn't that just be you'd have to interject verbally? But that's why I want to study sign language. That guy, David Cohen. I posted all about him. David Cohen, the guy who looks like David Letterman with a really impressive white beard, the bald guy who was signing for we saw the governor of Georgia speaking. But he's so expressive in the way he signs.
They all are.
Yes,
you
I know.
Think he happens to be
he happens
more?
To, I think so.
Really?
I think he happens to be better at performing it.
Do you know who I think is even better than him?
Oh, somebody told me.
A guy I saw the other day, the governor of Maryland, did a press conference.
Oh, yeah, you like that guy.
He was amazing. I couldn't take my eyes off him.
You got to see that. My friend studied ASL, American Sign Language, in college, and she recommended, she said Amber Galloway is the queen. She said she could watch her videos for forever.
I used to know the alphabet when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. Well, we can study it.
That's actually a really good New Year's resolution. Because I had, one of my resolutions was to, I have 10 of them. One of them was to learn something new.
Anything new?
Yeah. And I hadn't pinpointed what I wanted
like
to be.
Like a new skill?
Yeah.
Because you could argue that like learning to cook a new food is something new.
I wouldn't, in my metric, that
yeah.
would count.
Okay, what about a language? Yeah.
That would count.
Well,
learning a language would count. Learning sign language would count.
Yeah. Anyway, Katie Couric is...
so good at the lightning round. And by the way, so I think... Good. Maybe the first actual lightning round we've ever had.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She answered all the questions so efficiently and quickly in a speedy lightning-y way.
Yeah.
And I like when that round, which it often flies. Does. I like it when it often turns into a longer discussion. I like that.
Yeah.
But there's something nice about here are my efficient answers to all these questions.
Yeah.
I really appreciated it.
Yeah. She's, I think part of it is just because she's so bright that when I said this is the lightning round, she took it not literally, but I guess literally. Would that be taking it literally? No, I guess taking
it
literally
would be a figurative expression.
I guess so. She took a figurative expression literally.
Yeah.
I guess you could say that. Katie? And anyone
she has not made it this far.
You know. You know.
Let's read a letter.
Isn't it cool I could call her Katie? I mean, she was...
I noticed that you kept calling her Katie any chance you got.
Oh, really?
You're like, another question, Katie.
Well, because I think she's...
You were so proud that you were able to call her by such a familiar name.
Because she seems more like... Because she has such a youthful energy, too. She seems like more of a contemporary, not a contemporary intellectual.
On my fall?
Not on, like, my level in you know, a journalistic sense. But just as a person. It would feel weird... I know her also a little bit. I have like some tangential interaction with her, so it'd feel weird to call
her. Had you met her before?
You know what?
How could you not remember?
Well, no. This is the misleading thing about Instagram. It's
confusing. Oh, you met her at that? Uh-huh.
Yeah, through Instagram. Like we follow each other and we'll like.
But you never did her. You never.
Oh, what am I talking about? I never did her show.
Hmm.
Of course, I would remember that.
Yeah, I would think so.
I would definitely remember that. I have such a bad memory. And also, those morning shows, it's such a whirlwind doing them. It's like you go in and you do the makeup and then like, oh, you go out for like 5 minutes and it's like, and they're all at different desks. So,
Met Hoda.
I've definitely met Hoda.
You're almost friends with Hoda.
Well, I made a ho joke with Hoda.
You did?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I was talking to Kathy Lee and I called her Kath. And I said, I feel like I can call you Kath now. I can shorten your name. And Hoda said, you know what? Hoda made the joke. She said, just don't shorten. Oh, no, maybe I made the joke. I said, I don't know if I should do that with Hoda yet. And she was like, oh, and they started laughing. They're fun, cheeky gals. I like those two. Hoda and Kath. Ho and Kath.
Maybe future guests.
It'd be great.
I think we should read a letter.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Anyway, Katie, if you are listening this far, thank you.
And I'm sorry.
And I'm sorry. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Here we go. This is a letter from a nice, simple, strong name. Mike Morgan.
What a name.
Yeah. Mike Morgan. Subject, salutations. This letter is long overdue, but because of my procrastination, I now get to mention how terrific the Vince Vaughn episode is. Oh, I wonder why it's long overdue. Maybe just he meant to write. Maybe I should wait and learn why it might be long overdue.
And not editorialize?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Mike. And thank you. Justin has such a knack for bringing out the best in guests and seeing, hearing. This side of Vince was such a treat. It was a treat. I loved listening to Vince and that. Vince gushing aside, the original intent of this letter is to gush about Justin's performance as Brandon St. Randy. Oh, so many years ago, in a movie filled with hilarious moments, none are funnier than the scenes with Brandon, and I consider it the greatest cameo of all time. Thank you, Mike. Oh, that's why the subject was salutations. I say that in salutations. I'd love to hear you talk about it in depth next time you have a Zach and Miri co-star on. That's a good idea. Brandon Routh or Seth Rogen.
Elizabeth Banks.
Yep. But for now, I want to know how many of your lines that made it on screen were improvised. In exchange, I offer a would you rather blow. That's nice. Thank you both for the terrific content each week that makes these weird times a bit brighter. And then he's got these would you rathers. But we have a deal, Mike. So I would say improvised lines were, it's probably, you know, probably about half the lines, I would say. Kevin Smith let us do a lot of that. He would do these long takes, and so we would do a lot of improvising. But
didn't you do a thing for the end credits?
Oh my god! All
like
that
a
was,
separate scene.
Yeah,
that was all improvised.
All improvised. That was yeah.
All improvised. That was.
What was that? yeah, so fun. But and Seth Rogen obviously is so good at that. So is Elizabeth. So is Banks and Brandon Routh was fun. We did a lot. Mike, to answer your question, I'm trying to remember, like I said, you listen to the show, you know I have a terrible memory, but I do know the line, I hear this line a lot from people, you better shut your mouth or I'm going to fuck it, was a line that my friend John Togo told me he overheard at a restaurant he used to work at, a very muscular gentleman saying that to his lover, you better shut your mouth or I'm going to kiss it. And I just thought, we always thought it was the funniest thing to be that aggressive and flirtatious at the same time. So Kevin Smith liked it, left it in the movie. But the original line was Poo Punchers. I was in Poo Punchers 1 through 4 and then 6 through 8. Don't ask me about
it. Was
5.
Poo Punchers Kevin Smith's?
Yeah, that was
yours?
Kevin Smith's.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've noticed on Instagram occasionally people have said that I sound like your character in that movie. Have you ever?
Really?
Have you seen that?
No.
I've seen it maybe 10 times.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I had a very bad flu, I think, when I was doing that, very bad cold, and I, so my voice was kind of naturally lower and sort of nasally. Okay, back to the letter. Would you rather know everything everyone has said about you behind your back, or have everyone know everything you've said about them behind their back? Ooh, that is good.
That's a good one.
Oh, wow. You know what? Fuck, that is good. You know what's so funny? We encountered this a version of this last night. I was talking to a friend on the phone. And we hung up, or we were supposed to hang up, and I didn't hang up yet, and I realized he hadn't hung up his phone. Mm-hmm. And there was just all these kind of ambient noises of him getting out of his car, and like he was about to go inside. And he was going home, and I was so curious and kind of scared. There was like a voyeuristic feeling that I had about what he might say about having just talked to me. And I hung up before I could hear anything.
Yeah. Who was that person?
Friend of the show, Jerry O'Connell. Yeah. I'll say it. Yeah. Yeah. So Jerry, you had not hung up the phone, but,
and I encouraged you
to hang up. Yeah. Yes. Well, here's one of the reasons, the main reason I think I didn't right away was because one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life was the result of not having hung up the phone when Jerry hadn't hung up the phone. And it was when he was going through a drive-thru. Uh-huh. At Taco Bell, and I got to hear him order at Taco Bell drive-thru. I know this doesn't sound funny, but to this day, I think it'll forever be one of the funniest things I've ever heard. He said, there was like a long pause, and then he just said, I heard somebody say, yes, can I help you?
It was on my voicemail.
It was on yours, yeah.
Bad memory.
Yeah, huh. And Jerry just said, yes, I'd like three cheesy bean and rice burritos. And what? And goes, oh, Scott Speedman's
no,
calling.
No, 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 no,
would
no,
it be
no,
funny
no.
to have Scott?
He's gonna,
be
he's
so
gonna
mad.
Want to cut. He'll
yeah.
be he'll be mad.
Okay.
And a large Diet Pepsi.
Yeah, large Diet Pepsi. We should try to play it as the. Have we played that as a voicemail?
I think we have. Anywho.
Anywho. Okay.
So
this, all right. Would you rather? Would you rather know everything everyone has said about you behind your back, or have everyone know everything you've said about them behind their back?
What do you think?
I have
an answer.
I would say, God, everything. I guess I'd rather hear everything everyone said about me.
Me too. And I say that because it's something I'm not proud of.
Yeah.
I sometimes have an instinct to be a little gossipy.
Yeah.
And
too.
And I'm not proud. Something I want to change about myself.
Yeah.
And I think I've gotten better.
You have.
But you know, I've had instincts to talk about people behind their backs.
You both have to want to talk about people less behind their backs. I know.
And I know, like, it would be obviously very scary to have to hear everything.
It'd be awful.
And it would be hard.
But you know what? That's kind of.
But
like,
I'd rather do that. It's almost like.
It's literally your penance for having talked shit about people.
And it's almost like it's the same question of would you rather break up with someone or be broken up with? And I would always be broken up with.
Me too.
Because it's going to hurt, but I'd much rather deal with the hurt that was coming my way than to have to deal with, you know, someone else's hurt and to deal with the conscience of, having hurt someone.
Yeah, I agree. We're wired that way. Whatever that means. Yeah. I don't think it necessarily means we're good people or not good.
No, I think it makes us good people. It's just I would.
If anything, it makes us maybe more narcissistic, maybe more self-serving.
I don't know if you'd say that.
I don't know. I like that. I'm a bit of a masochist. So.
Yeah, I would want to hear. Also, I think hearing what people really think of you, it might help you clarify your relationship.
Yeah, well said.
And
maybe clean house a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or
that'd be a tough day, though, to get those transcripts.
It'd be really hard to go through that. You would need, I don't want to encourage drinking, but I think just me personally, I would have to be a little, I'd have to have something.
That would make it so much worse.
You think?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, depressant.
You know, here's a take. It might, in a weird way, be worse if you got all these transcripts of people talking about you and there was, like, nothing in them.
Oh, like you don't have strong feelings about you?
It's like no one talks about you.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
well,
no one cares.
No, but I'm thinking of people in your life that they definitely talk about
they do.
You.
I'm saying in theory.
Yeah, I know. That
I don't
bad.
Think this would happen.
It's
but
just like, well, it's all blank.
In theory, yeah, it's like, no one's ever said anything about you.
Yes, yeah. Or it's just like, oh, I feel like they might like rye bread, you know? Like, if it's really innocuous stuff.
But see, to me, I would like that because then you get both ends. You get to know that people care enough about you to be talking about you, and it's not bad.
See, but it would never.
I mean, best case scenario, people are just nice about it. It's all just positive stuff.
He's every time I leave hanging out with him, I just want more, you know, stuff like that. But that's not what people do. I mean, it's not what I do, which is why I think you too, which is why we're choosing that option. Because I've said things about people that I'm not proud of. And a lot of things that I no longer, with like some real soul searching, don't really feel.
I would say most of the stuff I've said, I could back up if forced to, and I could defend. But I still wouldn't
Right, you don't just talk shit to like
No, exactly. But I still wouldn't want to have to be in the position to do that and to maybe hurt someone's feelings. I would hate that.
Yes. And what if it's somebody that you've had a change in your relationship? What if it's like your relationship has evolved and you have gotten to know them better?
Right, and you don't feel that way.
You don't feel that way. Yeah.
Well, then you could just say that.
I guess so. I guess it's a great question though.
It really is.
Mike. And my God, thank you. You better shut your mouth. I thank you, Mike, for that. You know, I've been doing a lot of that character on Cameo, and it's really fun because it's a pretty easy thing for me to slip into. It's not like, some character that I have to. Somebody asked me to do a scene from Tusk the other day on that app. They said, can you just do this scene? That was one of the most challenging, not to sound pretentious, but it was such a difficult scene to do at the time, and I relied heavily on my scene partner and the makeup and all the crew and all that. And it was just like the thought of just launching into that. I need to prepare. But Brandon St. Randy is a fun one.
Because that comes very easy.
Yeah,
too.
Oh my God, please. Anyway, thank you. Speaking
thank
of Brandon
thank
St.
You,
Randy.
Thank you, Mike. And thank you to our distinguished guest, Katie Couric.
Eloquent.
Part of me hopes she's listening. Part of me hopes she's not. I hope she is.
Yeah.
But I'm more importantly than that, I'm glad all of you are listening. And if you would like to write in, our email address is lifeisshort@wondery.com.
So thank you. And I'm going to sign off in a way that I'm going to try not to be self-conscious about Katie listening to me signing off, because already it's disappointing. She would do it much better. She would do it something like this.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
You've been listening to Life is Short. I'm your host, Justin Long.
Life is Short is hosted by me,
Why?
Justin Long. It's produced and co-hosted Christian Long and Megan Monaco.
Oh, God.
Senior producer is Michelle.
She's not listening.
Mish Lanz.
Audio engineer is Sergio
Enriquez.
And two executive producers get their hands on this one, one being
Marshall Louis
and
Hernan Lopez
for
Wondery.
Question is, blondes or...
Or Margaret Pepper.
Blondes or brunettes? Which do you prefer? In parentheses, opposite sex.
She's like baiting me. Yeah.
It's too dangerous. You can't answer that.
Why not?
Brunettes.
Yeah, say.
For
me, I don't care. It's all about a woman's soul.
Wait, hair on her head or?
Oh, stop.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and bar mates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplish something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fellow the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.